Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Radically Open DBT Workbook for Eating Disorders, From Over-Control and Loneliness to Recovery and Connection. By Karen D. Hall, Ph.D., Ellen Astrakhan Fletcher, Ph.D., and Mima Simic, M.C. Foreword by Thomas R. Lynch, Ph.D. Narrated by Sarah Van Beckham. Publisher's Note: This audio edition references worksheets that can be downloaded at newharbinger.com/48930. Limit of liability / disclaimer of warranty. This publication is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering psychological, financial, legal, or other professional services. If expert assistance or counseling is needed, the services of a competent professional should be sought. Foreword. When we feel part of a tribe, we feel safe. T.R. Lynch. Humans are a hyper-cooperative species, more so than any other animal species. We engage in highly complex and coordinated group activities with non-kin, and comply without resistance to requests from complete strangers. Research shows that rather than falling apart or running amok when disaster strikes, most humans are calm and orderly and work together to help others. During times of extreme crisis, we forget about our individual differences, backgrounds, and beliefs, and unite for a common cause. For example, ask anyone closely involved in the 9/11 crisis in New York City the extent they were worried about whether the person they were helping was homeless or a millionaire, religious or atheist, black or white. A core component of this evolutionary advantage involved the development of complex social signaling capabilities that allowed for a quick and safe means to evaluate and resolve conflict and to manage potential collaborations. Our social signaling capacities are more powerful than most individuals realize, as they viscerally impact not only the person we are interacting with, but also our own physiology, most often at the preconscious level. Slow-motion film analysis has robustly revealed that we react to changes in the body movement, posture, and facial expressions of others during interactions without ever knowing it. Indeed, we are constantly social signaling when around others. For example, micro-expressions, body movements, even when deliberately trying not to. This means that silence can be just as powerful as non-stop talking. For our very early ancestors living in harsh environments, the cost of not detecting a signal of disapproval was too high to ignore, since banishment from the tribe was essentially a death sentence from starvation or predation. The use of the word tribe in RODBT is meant to foster an understanding of our evolutionary history, hunter-gatherer bands of people that were dependent on each other for survival. These small groups were more than families, they weren't all genetically related, but less than a city, state, or nation. These concepts were outside of humanity's experience at that time. This term is based on anthropological and evolutionary psychological perspectives, where hunter-gatherer tribes are generally understood to have been egalitarian. Everyone was equal in worth and status. Our goal is to help clients and therapists understand that from an RO perspective, to be psychologically healthy, we are all evolutionarily hardwired to need a sense of belonging to a small group of people who care about our well-being and whom we care about. Consequently, we are constantly scanning the social signals of others for signs of disapproval and are biologically predisposed to read them as disapproving, especially when they're ambiguous. This means we are essentially a socially anxious species. Blank expressions, furrowed brows, or slight frowns are often interpreted as disapproving, regardless of the actual intentions of the sender. Some people frown or furrow their brow when concentrating. Moreover, being rejected hurts. research shows that social ostracism triggers the same areas of the brain that are triggered when we experience physical pain. Thus, we fear the pain of exclusion, and our emotional well-being is highly dependent on the extent we feel socially connected. When I first began to develop principles for helping individuals who experience over-controlled coping, I was unaware of just how much the final intervention would emphasize the importance of social signaling as a primary mechanism of change. Over-controlled coping is characterized by a strong desire to control one's environment, restrained emotional expression, limited social interaction, problems with close relationships, and rigid and inflexible responses to change. And it became increasingly clear over time that the main downsides of over-controlled coping, often called maladaptive over-control, were primarily social in nature. These individuals tend to be serious about life, set high personal standards, work hard, behave appropriately, and frequently will sacrifice personal needs to achieve desired goals or help others. Yet inwardly, they often feel clueless about how to join in with others or establish intimate bonds. For example, over-controlled individuals tend to perceive new or unfamiliar, especially social, situations as potentially dangerous. So they will tend to mask or inhibit expressions of emotion, which often damages close social bonds and leads to misunderstanding or distrust, because it is hard for others to read their true feelings or intentions. Often, no one outside the immediate family is aware of an over-controlled individual's inner psychological distress. Moreover, since self-control is highly valued by most societies, the problems associated with excessive inhibitory control have received little attention or have been misunderstood. Most treatments do not recognize maladaptive over-control as a problem, so most over-controlled clients suffer in silence. What is exciting to me is that this book represents an important means of addressing this gap by providing step-by-step guidance on how to address problems of over-control with a special emphasis on eating disordered, ED, problems like anorexia nervosa. Radically Open Dialectical Behavior Therapy, RODBT, differs from many other treatment modalities because it does not consider restricted or ritualized eating to be the primary problem. Instead, the focus is on social signaling deficits interfering with social connectedness. Thus, the book you are about to listen to considers anorexia nervosa and related ED problems as symptoms or consequences of maladaptive over-control, OC, coping. Research shows that perfectionistic and over-controlled styles of coping often precede the development of eating disorder symptomatology. Wow! The good news is that the book you are listening to is informed by an evidence-based treatment. The research literature supports the efficacy of RODBT in the treatment of over-controlled disorders, including patients with anorexia nervosa, autism, chronic depression, and over-controlled personality disorders. Secondly, this book has been inspired and written by three of our most senior RODBT clinician scientists, Karen Hall, Ph.D., Ellen Astrakhan Fletcher, Ph.D., and Mima Simic, M.D., all of whom I have had the good fortune to collaborate with and supervise over multiple years, and perhaps, more importantly, I consider each a good friend. They were all intensively trained by me years before publication of the RODBT treatment manuals and are founding members of the RODBT Senior Clinician Team, which provides oversight and guidance on our ongoing dissemination efforts. I know from personal experience that each of them actively practices the RO skills you will learn about in this book, and each has had years of experience teaching and supervising clinicians in RODBT. Their collective experience made it possible for them to creatively transform core RODBT principles into a practical self-help guide that can be used either on its own or as a means of supplementing professional therapy. What is also great about this book is that it is meant to be fun. But that does not mean it will be easy. Radically open living means learning how to create a life worth sharing. A life worth sharing is worth sharing because it is lived in a manner that accounts for the needs of others, is open to critical feedback, and is willing to contribute to the benefit of others without always expecting something in return. It recognizes that one cannot achieve heightened self-awareness in isolation, that we need other people, hopefully our friends, to point out our blind spots. Consequently, a life worth sharing highlights open dialogue and companionship as a core means of personal growth. The skills in this book will not focus on how to take life more seriously, try harder, plan ahead, or behave more appropriately in public. Instead, the emphasis will be on skills most OC individuals find quite difficult: resting, relinquishing control, and revealing vulnerability. The chilling-out exercises embedded throughout the text are one cool example of this. So don't just listen. Actively practice the skills and complete the worksheets, because although the end result is unknowable, the risk of change, in my opinion, is well worth it. Thomas R. Lynch, Ph.D. Chapter 1. Is This Book for You? Welcome to the Radically Open DBT Workbook for Eating Disorders. Perhaps you're considering recovery from an eating disorder for the first time, or maybe you've worked toward recovery before. Maybe you've tried different approaches and haven't been successful in reaching your goals. Whatever your situation, we're glad you're thinking about choosing recovery and that you're considering the approach in this workbook. If you've been in therapy before, perhaps your past treatment focused on control of your emotions and behaviors. That's common among a variety of treatments. However, research shows that there's a group of people who experience emotional pain that interferes with their functioning, yet they have excellent self-control. They don't need to develop more control of their emotions or behavior. So treatments that focus on helping them regulate their emotions or impulses often aren't helpful. What they need instead is a treatment that helps them be more open with their emotional experience and build connections with others. A relatively new mental health treatment called Radically Open Dialectical Behavior Therapy, RODBT, resonates with many who are suffering from eating disorders. People we have worked with have told us the following about RODBT. I've been in treatment for eating disorders for over a decade, and this is the first treatment that has ever felt like it gets me. RO helps you free yourself from the rules. RODBT is an effective treatment for a certain group of people, but it's not for everyone. Are you someone who could benefit? Keep listening, and let's find out. RODBT, a very brief intro. Knowing whether a treatment fits your personality type and addresses the changes you need to make for psychological health is an important question to consider before you start any treatment. This workbook is based on Radically Open Dialectical Behavior Therapy, RODBT, an evidence-based transdiagnostic. Transdiagnostic means that the treatment can be applied to many different diagnoses without tailoring the treatment to each one. Treatment, developed by Dr. Thomas Lynch for those who have disorders of maladaptive, not providing adequate or appropriate adjustment to the environment or situation, over control, a category that includes many people with various eating disorders. RODBT, as a transdiagnostic therapy, doesn't target specific diagnoses, but the personality style that underlies different diagnoses. Dr. Lynch developed the therapy to include a weekly individual session as well as a weekly RODBT skills class. Why RODBT? Because it's not about the diagnosis. Researchers have found that it's often important for treatment success to consider the underlying personality style. Individuals who seek therapy often have multiple diagnoses, yet there's not a treatment to target all the different combinations. For example, people who have problems with anxiety often struggle with an eating disorder or depression. Individuals who have a diagnosis of depression may also suffer from anxiety or an eating disorder. Plus, individuals with one eating disorder diagnosis can, over time, or at the same time, have symptoms of different eating disorders. This overlap suggests that there are shared underlying causes for different mental health diagnoses, including eating disorders. The underlying coping or personality style can be key to treatment success. If overcontrol is your underlying coping style, then the basic target for treatment, based on the RO view, is loneliness, a lack of secure, intimate, satisfying relationships with other people. Researchers agree that interpersonal problems are evident across different eating disorder diagnoses. For those who are overcontrolled, OC, in their coping style, in general meaning they don't show their emotions easily, they're often detail-oriented perfectionists, and they can be inflexible in their thinking and behavior. RODBT asserts that loneliness is a core underlying cause of various eating disorders. And this is true even for those who have chosen to be alone because they've learned being with people is painful. Long-standing loneliness can be a difficult experience. To be clear, loneliness is not about the number of people you come into contact with. You can be in the company of a large number of people and still be lonely. It's about whether you're forming close connections and experiencing a sense of belonging. Have you ever been at a party or a room full of friends and felt totally alone? That's an example of being around people but not feeling connected. You can suffer from loneliness and not understand the reasons or how you inadvertently contribute to it or how you can alleviate it. You might believe you're flawed as a human being, or that all other people are jerks, and you might give up on relationships. But RODBT posits that the loneliness stems not from any inherent flaw in you or anyone else, but from maladaptive social signaling, which interferes with or blocks connections with others. In this book, we'll work with you to help build your skills to connect with others, particularly in the area of social signaling. The key is social signaling. A social signal is any action or overt behavior, regardless of its form, its intent, or the performer's awareness, that is carried out in the presence of another person. This includes facial expressions, voice tone, gestures, body posture, spoken words, and the like. Research shows that social signaling impacts whether others want to spend time with you and get to know you, and the formation of close, intimate relationships. RODBT focuses on helping you build connections and alleviate loneliness by changing your social signaling that may be blocking connections with others. Meet our team of individuals working on recovery. We wrote this book with the help and wisdom of the individuals we are honored to work with on their recovery. We have learned from them, and they have contributed to and advised us about this workbook in many ways. Their experiences help us illustrate the skills and ideas discussed throughout this workbook. The following bios represent them, but no one bio is about any one person. John. I'm 38, Asian American, with a wife and two children. My 10-year-old son is in all honors classes, and I make sure he's an athlete, too. My 8-year-old daughter is shy, but she excels in gymnastics. I run marathons, and my times are competitive. It's important to me to gain lean muscle mass. I've been diagnosed with orthorexia and mild OCD, and I'm concerned about how treatment might affect my training. As a child, I was pretty anxious. I didn't have many friends. I was a little overweight until I joined the track team as a freshman in high school. I've been dedicated to running since then. I began watching my calories carefully in college. I wanted to be thinner to improve my running time. Then I cut out all fats and sugars so I could be as lean as possible. I allowed myself limited carbs only on the nights before marathons. I run a minimum of 5 miles a day, regardless. No excuses. I don't go out with friends because I can't eat what I want to eat in restaurants, and most of the time people want to get together around food. My wife and I had some pretty difficult arguments about it, but she's started to socialize with friends without me. I worry about that sometimes, but I don't want to change my routine. I feel awkward around most people anyway. Susie. I'm a 24-year-old African-American woman, pursuing my doctorate in education. I'm in treatment for bulimia and self-harm behaviors. When I was 15, I developed anorexia. In the past 9 years, I've been admitted and readmitted to various inpatient, residential, partial hospitalization, intensive outpatient, and outpatient therapy programs. When I increase my calorie intake and gain weight, I become distraught, so recovery has been tough. All my life, I've been a perfectionist. I have thoughts that I need to punish myself, especially after my planned and secret late-night binge and purge episodes. I lie to my boyfriend to hide my binging and purging, and then I feel so bad about lying that I hurt myself again, because I deserve to be punished. He's a good guy, and I hate lying to him. My parents have always been there for me, and I feel guilty that my behaviors cause them pain. I don't want to burden them, and to be honest, I don't want them to interfere with what I want to do, so I don't tell them when I struggle, and I don't ask for help. I don't feel close to my two sisters, as they are always competing with me. I can't help it if I win all the time. Amy. I'm an 18-year-old Caucasian woman in my senior year of high school, and I've been diagnosed with anorexia. I've also been diagnosed with depression, and was misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder. I'm pretty anxious, too. As long as I can remember, I've been a high achiever and competitive. When I was 12, my grandmother died. I was so close to her. When I was 14, my father divorced my mother and moved to live abroad. I didn't see him again. It's like he forgot about me, my sister, and mom. I was hurt and sad as well. I turned to my older sister, Rachel, but she just told me, don't be a baby, and to stop crying and showing emotions, because I was upsetting our mother. So I learned to bottle up my sadness and restrict my eating, to numb my emotions. I engaged in self-harm when I couldn't stop dwelling that others were better than me in classes and sports, or after arguments with my mother. I secretly planned when I would self-harm and would cut in places not visible to others. That helped numb my emotions, too. When my mother put pressure on me to eat more and gain some weight, I would harm myself more. Whenever I think that my control is taken away from me, I feel misunderstood and get angry and dismissive, and I criticize those who are close to me. I say hateful things, and I have an angry, frozen face. A childhood friend once described me as being brutal in my approach to others. I see myself as an awful person, unlovable and unlikable. People my age reject me, and it hurts when they leave me out of their get-togethers. At the same time, I've outgrown most of the people my age that I know. They are pretty childish, silly, and immature. They also gossip too much. I'm good at academic work, but even when I was younger, I spent most of my time at school on my own. I felt depressed and lonely. I saw a therapist before. My mother insisted. The therapist wasn't helpful, and I felt even more hopeless. I wanted to just give up. The doctor got worried about my low weight and tried to get me to go to residential or inpatient. I just wanted to be left alone. I made 3 suicide attempts. And then I was admitted to a psychiatric hospital. Stephanie. I'm 32 years old and Caucasian. I live with my parents. I work part-time at a grocery store, though I wish I had a better job. I hate that I didn't complete college, have never lived on my own, and have never had a date. There's so much that I haven't done, because I've been anorexic since I was 10. I want to be financially independent, live on my own, go out with friends, have a girlfriend, and travel the world. I am so envious of people my age who have friends and are married. I am lonely, but I'll never have friends or a wife, because I'm simply different from other people and will never fit in. My family is the reason I don't have any kind of life. All they do is sit home and watch television. And my sister constantly talks about how you're nobody if you don't go to college. I get so angry with all of them. Then I'm really awful to them. I think I'm an evil person. When I do go out, I feel so self-conscious that I just try to be invisible. I don't know how to talk with people, and I can't think of what to say. I'm socially inept, so I stay quiet for fear of saying the wrong thing and being seen as a loser. I'm having some significant health issues as a result of my severe anorexia. Sometimes I regret not choosing to recover when I was younger. I just want to guarantee that I'll be happier and successful if I recover. What will I have if I don't have the anorexia? Antonio. I'm 46, Hispanic, male, and recently divorced. I've been diagnosed with binge eating disorder. I currently reside in my sister's basement. I was fired from my job. My manager said I couldn't get along with people. I have so much stress. The stress of my recent job loss, my divorce, the lack of structure in my day, and having bills I can't pay. I try not to think about it all, so I stay up late at night playing video games. I also binge until 2 or 3 in the morning, either ordering in takeout or going out for snacks from stores or restaurants that are open late. I try not to eat in the late afternoon and evening, but I have to eat before I can fall asleep. I usually sleep late, and I'm not hungry for breakfast. I don't eat until I have a healthy lunch with my sister and her family, and they complain about my lifestyle. They think I'm lazy. I restrict what I eat during the day to make up for the binge I had the night before, because I want to lose weight and get back on track. I live in a high-weight body, and I've been taunted and bullied my entire life due to my size. In childhood, my mother put me on diets, weighed me, and said I couldn't eat sweets because I was too fat. She was trying to help, but I think it just made everything worse. The individuals on our recovery team all have different diagnoses, including anorexia and orthorexia, binge eating, bulimia, depression, anxiety disorders, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. What they all have in common, though, is an over-controlled coping style, which is at the root of the different types of distress they experience. Clinical practice and emerging research show that to treat an eating disorder, it's better to address the underlying cause of the disorder, such as over-controlled coping, rather than the overt problem, for example, the anorexia. For example, you can see the trunk and limbs of a tree, but the roots are not so obvious. If we were to remove the limbs of the tree, similar to addressing the restriction, purging, binge eating, or other symptoms of an eating disorder, the roots would be left untouched, the over-controlled personality style. Just as treating the roots of a tree can make the limbs healthier, treating the over-control can affect the maladaptive eating disorder emotions and behaviors by making it easier for an ED sufferer to live their values, express themselves more openly, be more flexible, and connect with others. Treating over-controlled coping, the roots of the tree, is a promising new way to effectively treat various eating disorders. That's the approach that we'll be using in this workbook. This book is for you if... So back to the question, is this book for you? The RODBT approach is transdiagnostic, and it focuses on helping individuals with maladaptive overcontrol, OC, build connections. If you have an eating disorder and have OC traits like perfectionism, reserve, inhibited expression of emotions, and rigidity, then this book might be for you. In chapters to come, we'll explore what it means to have OC traits and whether that fits your coping style. But first, a brief but important announcement. You still need a team. We strongly recommend that in addition to this workbook, you work with a treatment team, including a physician and nutritionist.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?